2 minutes.
Well, good morning. We have a packed house this morning, so I'll try to speak up if I can. One of the things that I guess I want to do to begin with is to thank the symposium organizers for asking me to talk about this topic. It was interesting that they used the word era when describing this symposium. The question I guess that Dr. Palazzotto put up was, are we in fact entering a new era where we do need to rethink how we're recommending nutrients? And can we improve our recommendation systems to account for some of the more complex problems we're going to be dealing with in the future? As part of this, I've been asked to talk about a specific aspect of this, which is allocating funds to fertilizer nutrients. This is a very complex topic, and most of the time when you hear particularly someone from industry talking about this, you'll hear things about the need for balanced fertility, making sure that all nutrients are accounted for that the soil cannot supply on its own, that need to be supplemented. You may hear things about short versus long-term impacts, trying to maximize a farmer's returns in the short term may produce a recommendation that compromises long-term fertility and long-term sustainability of the soils. And so all of those factors are at work here. And I don't want to gloss over them, but I'm not going to talk specifically about those. What I am going to try to discuss is trying to understand how we can come up with a very specific answer to a very specific question. And that question is one that we've been getting quite a bit in the last year and a half. Is I simply can't afford, like I used to be able to, what's being recommended to me. So what do we do? The questions that the U.S. farmers were asking, at least in my region, which is the Corn Belt primarily, were the questions that are asked by farmers every day in developing countries. They know that they need the nutrients, but they simply cannot afford all that they need. And the U.S. farmers found themselves in a similar situation. Well, how have others tried to answer this? It turns out that there is an answer to this question, although it's a bit complex. The problem is when you go and look at university recommendations, you don't get much help typically. The reason that university recommendations as they stand now are the result of studies that were done that primarily looked at the response of crops to one nutrient, holding all other nutrients at a higher non-limiting level. What we're really interested in are nutrient recommendations that account for the interactions of nutrients. And those just aren't ubiquitous. There are some being used internationally, like the QEFS model, or the Qualitative Evaluation for Fertility of Tropical Soils, and that's been used extensively in Southeast Asia. But the U.S. does not have a system like that that looks at the interaction of nutrients, at least to my knowledge in the Corn Belt. If you take a look, there are people that have looked at this, and for those of you who are in soil fertility, one of the primary sources for fertility knowledge is Charles Black's book. In his book, I often find myself going back to that book when I'm in trouble with a question, because he often has an answer. It's just up to me to find it. And in fact, Charles Black did outline the methodology needed to answer this question. And it's in a couple of sections in his book. They're entitled Combination for Maximum Profit, How Do Two Nutrients Interact, and How Do You Recommend Nutrients to Maximize the Profit in a Given Year? And then the second one is Most Profitable Combination for a Given Expenditure. Well, that's a bingo. It's exactly what we had. We could only afford so much, and we had to understand how to allocate those nutrients those fertilizer dollars across nutrients to try to make the best use of the dollars available. If you take a look at what Charles Black had in his book as an example, this is what you see. This is a response by wheat to two nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus. I'll try to use this pointer without screwing things up here. But here you can see this is nitrogen rate as we go across this axis. And so we're looking at the response of nitrogen from a 0 to 120 kilos. If we look at phosphorus, we're going from 0 to about 50 kilos. And you see that the lowest point on the response occurs when neither nutrient is applied. The highest point on the response occurs when both nutrients are applied. And applying one nutrient without the other results in local maxima, but not an overall maximum. So again, reinforces the point, when the soil is not able to supply more than one nutrient, we do need to account for the interactions of these nutrients, because applying both is better implying one by itself. So if you take a look at the response curves that are involved in this, and this is just for a two-nutrient interaction, we have the classic quadratic surface. You'll see that this is the intercept. This is the lowest point on that response surface. Then you have something that looks like a quadratic response for nitrogen, a quadratic response for phosphorus, and then the real key here is the interaction term. And that produces that high yield when both are applied. If you take into account the price of nitrogen, the price of phosphorus, and the price of the crop, you basically are in a position to solve the problem for the combination of the two nutrients that produce maximum profit. What it takes is solving two equations simultaneously, and you're basically looking on that response surface where the last dollar invested in the nitrogen produces an equivalent response in revenue. And you have to solve both of these equations simultaneously. And when you do that, and we'll use an example here where we have 40 cent per kilo nitrogen and 350 per kilo of phosphorus, that's elemental phosphorus, and then wheat at 165 US dollars per megagram, you come up with a recommendation that will be 110 kilos of nitrogen and 30 kilos of phosphorus. So it is possible to come up with a combination that maximizes profit. The key is you have to have the response surface. Okay, let's go to the next question. And the question that farmers are asking right now is, I can't afford that program that you just outlined. I can afford half of that. So now what are you going to tell that farmer? Do you just drop the phosphorus and apply the nitrogen? Buy as much nitrogen as you can? We know that's not the answer, but that's what happened last year. So how can we do something that equips these farmers to make more informed decisions? How can we do something that brings the science of those decisions to the farm gate? This requires, again, some math. And we're again solving two equations simultaneously to get to this. The first equation is just an equation for total cost. We have what the farmer can afford, and we have the price of nitrogen, and we have the price of phosphorus. The second equation is a bit more difficult, but you're basically looking at that response surface and saying, let's find a point where an equivalent increase in the expenditures of both nitrogen and phosphorus produce an equivalent increase in revenue. You solve those equations simultaneously and you've solved the problem. Here I'll show what the result is for this example. When a farmer can only afford half of that nutrient program, the answer is not to apply no phosphorus and concentrate on nitrogen. The answer is you need to reduce your nitrogen rate to 83 kilos, but still apply about 12 kilos of phosphorus. That's the maximum combination. So again, it's having to try to account for these interactions and bringing that science to farmers. The challenge, of course, and the thing that's always stopped this up, is that we need this nutrient response surface. And that's a kicker, because we know that two-factor interaction studies are not done commonly for a number of reasons, very good reasons. And even getting to the third factor is often not done at all. So the question is, how do we as a scientific community try to address this? Now what I'm going to show in the next little bit here is really a mathematical exercise. And there's a big difference between a mathematical exercise and a recommendation. And I want to just state that very clearly. Well, what I would do is, if we were all in a room together and we're trying to figure out where do we go in this new era, I would bring this up as simply a point of discussion that would hopefully initiate some brainstorming, and that's the reason for bringing it up now. Recognize that it's a mathematical exercise, but what I'm trying to do is to see, could we do something with this response surface based on very little data? Because that's what we're faced with. That's what the qualitative evaluation for the fertility of tropical soils, the QEFS model, did, was to try to come up with interactions based on very little data, things that you would get from omission plots. And we wanted to see if we could do something similar with this. And so I'll go through that. The kind of data that we really have to work with at the farm level are the farmer's expected yields, recommended nutrient rates that are already in place. And these include not only the math that got there, but some sort of philosophy of interpreting the data. And so there's a confounding of science and philosophy and recommendations. And then we need to do some estimate of yield response, and that's kind of the tricky part. So let me just kind of go through this little mathematical exercise. There was a paper published by Van Rijs and Cantareia out of Brazil. And they found themselves in a similar situation where they had to try to estimate a response to one nutrient. And they had very little data. They basically had a point that would be estimated from relative yield, given with a soil test level, and they could see what the yield would be if it were left unfertilized. And then they had a point, the higher point, which was the expected yield. They equated that with maximum yield. And when you do that, they were able to go back and mathematically solve and estimate a quadratic response function through two points. The reason is this top point contains an equation. Because that is the maximum yield, the differential of that yield with respect to X produces is equivalent to zero, so you have one equation. You also have an equation, this quadratic equation, which is factored in, and then you have an equation that describes the difference between these two points. You have three equations, you have three unknowns, which are the coefficients of that quadratic response, and you can solve it. And that's what they did. So you can basically solve and estimate a quadratic response through two points if you assume that one of those points is reflecting a recommendation that just maximizes yield. Always assumptions in these models. So if you want to just go through this mathematical exercise then, we can start framing in a three-dimensional response surface. And what I'm going to show you here is if you take a look at recommendations, those are based on responses that occur when the other nutrients are non-limiting. So if you're in 3D space, you're basically can wire in two responses on these planes where you're looking at the response of one nutrient here, X1, when X2 is non-limiting, or at a rate that's applied that maximizes the yield. And you can do the same thing for your second nutrient. So you've got two wire frames in 3D space. The question becomes then that you need something out here. And that's when neither nutrient's been applied. This you can get from omission plots. Another way that you can get it is to just make some assumptions and say, well, maybe it's just the lower of these two points. Maybe it doesn't go any lower. There's no interaction there. The other thing that you could do is just say, okay, instead of just using the lower of these two points, we could assume that there's some interaction. Let's assume that this is 70% relative yield, this is 80% relative yield, and just an interaction guesstimate would be the multiplication of those two are about 56% relative yield. So you can do some estimates. Measurements are better, always. So if you have these four points, again, you can use the same system that Van Rijge and Cantarea produced and reproduce a quadratic through those two points, assuming that there is some local maximum there. And you've just framed in another wire of your three-dimensional space. And then you do the same thing over here, and you've got the fourth wire on your three-dimensional space. So again, this is a mathematical exercise, but as you can see, when you start framing in these parts, those are at yields where the second nutrient is at zero. And because of that, you now have the coefficients for the overall response equation. And if you assume that the maximum yield is the farmer's expected yield, now you can solve for the interaction term and you've completed the mathematical exercise, and that is that now you have all the coefficients for the response surface. Now again, the reason to go through this is not to try to be some sort of a champion for a new recommendation system. The reason for going through this is to demonstrate that there are some things that we can do, I think, better than what we're currently doing with recommendation systems. There is math in place that we can use, or are concepts in place that we can use to bring the science of these recommendations and the interactions that farmers so desperately need to that decision-making process. If we take a look, there are many things that we can do in the field, and there are many assumptions made with this. I know those are flying through your head as I talk about this, as they are through mine. One of the most important, of course, is that these recommendations will produce just maximum yield. We know that there's a philosophy involved in that. And often the philosophy cannot be decoupled from the rate recommendation. We really don't know how much room for play, as it were, is in some of these rate recommendations. The other thing that we could do is to try to take some of these assumptions out. Particularly in developing countries, we have a large amount of data available from omission plots. And if you take a look at the omission plot structure I've got down here, where we have nitrogen and phosphorus together, we could assume that that's the rate that's associated with maximum yield, and then basically a minus phosphorus with only N applied, a minus nitrogen with only phosphorus applied, and then a zero where neither one's been applied. These omission plots could provide us with some of the data that we need to start trying to wireframe these response surfaces in and help farmers try to do a better job of allocating nutrients. Okay, so just kind of to conclude, I don't see another way, and I hope maybe some future talks in this session may provide some better insights. But when I looked at this topic, I always found myself coming back to these response surfaces and how we need to navigate across those response surfaces when we start taking a look at how two nutrients interact. Without that knowledge, I'm not sure how you tell a farmer to allocate nutrients. I mean, there's always a lot of guesswork, and we can go on that. But we saw what happened the last couple of years when that happened, and just nutrients just did not get applied that needed to be applied. And so I don't know that we can rely on conceptual things at the farm gate. We need something that's a bit more quantitative. And so what I've just shown here is just a little mathematical exercise to say that I don't think that these things are unattainable. I think we just need to move in that direction and see how far we can get as a collective group of scientists. The third thing is that these approaches, when we look at this, these response surfaces, these only consider 1 year. And that's, we need to go beyond that. We might be able to come up with some math that'll help us with a single year, get a farmer out of trouble type of thing. But in the long term, we also have to factor in this long-term soil fertility and long-term sustainability of the soils and make sure that the fertility that brings value to those soils is maintained. So I guess I'm going to end with just kind of a question in the group is, can we make better use of the data that we already have? Do we need to do a lot more studies? Those always need to be done. And I wish, for many of you in the room, I wish we had more funding to give you for these important things. But let's kind of take stock of what we have and see if we can do something that might get some of these decisions better meted out quantitatively at the farm level. So with that, I'll conclude.
I think we have time for a few questions, if you don't mind staying up here, Scott.
I go through more math.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, I guess the question is that, you know, we have some existing data, how do we use it? And can we use it in a different way than we already have? Does that capture your question? Yeah, I think a lot of the data that we have, you know, most scientists at universities are sitting on data, the raw data from past experiments, and then there's the recommendation that evolved from those data, and those are two different animals, and I guess what I guess I'm suggesting is that we perhaps go back and take a look at the actual data that was collected or were collected at that time and try to decouple the philosophy from what the data were showing originally. And when we do that, and that started to be done in some regional databases, like for instance in the Midwest, where they have nitrogen recommendations, and kind of as a first step, I would say, they've moved toward housing all of those response data in one place. So that they can just take a look at it and scientists can start looking at it. If any of you heard some of the talks earlier in this conference, there was a call for trying to do some more data sharing where we can have central repositories where we can all be using the same data. I guess that's where I'd like to see us move. If we can do that, then we can take some of the responses that we already have to try to see how many of these are actually, you know, meeting this requirement that for some model that needs to be used, like the model that I outlined with this mathematical exercise. You know, the assumption was that the rate applied was that needed to just maximize yield. Well, how often does that really occur in the data sets that we have? How often are these responses truly quadratic? Or how often are the responses, you know, linear and plateaued? I mean, there's a lot of questions that we could answer if we all had access to the data to try to get some sort of sense of risk into these recommendations. these new recommendations. That's a windy response to a short answer, but. Yeah, I appreciate those comments, Paul. Did everybody hear those okay? Yeah, I think that the general feeling is that the recommendations need to be simple. And I think what Paul's getting at is that the interface needs to be simple. But there can be some very complex things go behind these recommendation systems where the output is understandable. But we don't have to rely on simple approaches to make the end recommendation.
Okay, thanks again, Scott.
Okay, thank you.